You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Catholic News, read by Chris Mihalik. Source of our program is DenverCatholic.org. Miscarriage information. Misleading ads tried to scare voters away from abortion bans by Patty McGuire Armstrong of the National Catholic Register. A recently released political ad features a fictional woman's bitter final words to her father, supporter of Donald Trump, as she lay dying from an implied pregnancy complication. "I didn't have to end this way, Dad," the woman says. "You know what he'd do. You knew his politics would end my freedom, my rights. You chose hate over me." The woman isn't the only thing that's fictional about the ad. None of the pro-life laws that states have passed in the 2 years since the end of Roe v. Wade prevent women from receiving medical care for a miscarriage or another pregnancy-related emergency. The ad from an anti-Trump political action group called the Lincoln Project drew a swift condemnation from pro-life leaders. "Shame on you, Project Lincoln, for spreading blatant lies," Dr. Christina Francis, CEO of American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, wrote on X. "Every law in the country allows for OBGYNs like me to intervene immediately when a woman has a potentially life-threatening condition. Stop intimidating people with lies. Pro-life laws protect women and girls." The claim that any pro-life laws would not permit treatment for miscarriage is false. Katie Daniel, the state policy director for Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, told the Register, "It's an insult to tell women they have something to fear." Yet the frequency of these claims by Vice President Kamala Harris and other Democratic candidates suggests the strategy is proving effective on some level. Recently, Daniel heard from someone who had a miscarriage who told her that a family member asked her, "Are you even going to be able to get care?" "We need to do more to push against this narrative," Daniel said. Lewis Brown, executive director of the Christ Medicus Foundation and board member and vice president of public policy of the Catholic Healthcare Leadership Alliance, agrees. "Abortion, the intentional killing of an unborn child, is never medically necessary to save the life of a pregnant mother. Catholic medical professionals and Catholic hospitals in the United States have cared for tens of millions of mothers and preborn children in all sorts of circumstances without having to perform an abortion," he told the Register. "Every pro-life state law and every proposed pro-life federal legislative proposal seeks to protect pregnant mothers and preborn children in the event of pregnancy complications. Every single pro-life state law in the country allows medical professionals and healthcare entities to provide medical care for pregnant mothers in circumstances of miscarriage or other unexpected medical difficulties. The abortion industry and pro-abortion elected officials are intentionally attempting to confuse the American people by conflating abortion with miscarriage and other pregnancy complications. The abortion industry is also lying about pro-life health care, Catholic health care, and the impact of pro-life state and federal laws that restrict abortion. He added, "The truth is that faithfully Christ-centered Catholic and pro-life medical professionals and hospitals provide excellent medical care for both pregnant mothers and their preborn children. The truth is that states with pro-life abortion restrictions are the safest places for the life, health, and dignity of pregnant mothers and preborn children. Both pregnant mothers and preborn children deserve quality medical care that respects and protects the dignity of them both." Contrary to the deceptions of the abortion industry, chemical and surgical abortions are amongst the greatest dangers to the life, health, and safety of pregnant mothers. Scare tactics. According to Daniel, no pro-life group supports laws that punish women. Women are being lied to constantly, such as being told their baby is not a human being, or that they won't get medical care, or they will face legal consequences if they get an abortion. She encourages people to actually read the abortion laws in their state and realize how frequently pro-abortion politicians are willing to lie to push their agenda. The pro-life side has written these laws to protect women and their children, Daniel said. Daniel pointed to pro-abortion groups using the death of 28-year-old Amber Thurman in Georgia to push their agenda. Thurman had taken an abortion pill and suffered complications, but delayed going to the emergency room. Some media outlets and politicians are misleading people by claiming Georgia barred doctors from saving her life. That is false. The Georgia Department of Community Health issued a statement regarding misinformation on their abortion laws. In the state of Georgia, abortion is permissible at any stage of pregnancy to save the life and health of the mother in the event of an emergency. The statement said further that failure to provide life-saving treatment may constitute medical malpractice, adding, physicians are reminded that Georgia law requires life-saving medical care to a mother without delay. Another woman, Leona Dixon, who died of the same complications in Nevada, which has liberal abortion laws, is never mentioned because her story doesn't serve their agenda, Daniel said. So she will not get mourned because she's not a useful political tool to the other side. Daniel wondered if Thurman had been told there is a 1 in 20 chance for complications from the abortion pill. The drug label says there is a 1 in 20 chance, she said. Many businesses that are selling abortion have been cited for not providing the proper informed consent. Women Speak Out, a political action committee partner of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, has launched ads to combat such misinformation. The Charlotte Logier Institute, the research arm of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, uses scientific, statistical, and medical research to educate the value of life from fertilization to natural death. Its 2023 annual report found that pro-life laws exempt women from prosecution in all states that have strong gestational limits on abortion. Doctor's perspective, Dr. Sudhir Jayaprabhu, an obstetrician and gynecologist in Texarkana, Texas, who is a member of AAPLOG Action, advocating for both mothers and their children, noted that there have been no changes in regulations in Texas for dealing with miscarriages or ectopic pregnancies. In fact, the Texas law, section 245.002, clearly states that removing a dead unborn child whose death was caused by spontaneous abortion, i.e. miscarriages, does not constitute an act of abortion. This is the same way that we have practiced medicine both before and after the Texas heartbeat bill, he said. When a baby has a heartbeat, but there is a threatened miscarriage because the mother is bleeding, Jayaprabhu explained that it is referred to as a threatened spontaneous abortion. The accepted treatment is to wait until the cervix is opened, but there is no heartbeat, he said. If an infection is noted, known as septic abortion, we would, of course, treat appropriately. Therefore, there is no change to the law as to how miscarriages are treated in the state of Texas. There is a lot of miscommunication, he added, and it is rather frustrating, clarifying amid confusion. Monica Miller, founder and director of Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, explained the crux of the miscarriage misinformation. To a minimal level, there has been some confusion as to what doctors can do to treat ectopic pregnancies. I don't think these laws are vague, but whatever confusion there is, let's get it fixed and move past that. Miller said that the situation of misapplication, misunderstanding, or confusion on abortion bans are being used as an excuse to push for abortion to be legal at all 9 months of the pregnancy. It's completely disingenuous, she said. Miller pointed out that Oklahoma issued a statement clearing up any confusion after the state banned most abortions. It was clarified that the abortion ban does not apply to ectopic pregnancies or IVF and stated medical doctors in particular should be given substantial leeway to treat pregnant women experiencing life-threatening or emergency physical conditions using their reasoned medical judgment. For the sake of clarity, Miller likened laws banning abortion to homicide laws. There are very rightly laws that forbid homicide. However, there are cases when such laws are misapplied. And indeed, totally innocent people have ended up serving time in prison, sometimes for decades, until they are exonerated. And surely there have been cases when innocent people were actually executed for murders they never committed. What is the remedy for such injustice? Shall we just make murder legal so these misapplications do not happen? That's the same thing, really, with supporting abortion on demand, because banning such killing might lead to misapplication of the ban. Listen to their rhetoric that leads to the situation where every unborn child could be subjected to extermination. Why don't they say instead, let's clarify the laws? As a media expert and host, EWTN's Radio Catholic Connection, Teresa Tomeo, expressed frustration at the misinformation coming from media sources in particular, leading to Catholics and others falling prey to these scare tactics. People sometimes react emotionally as opposed to thinking things through and doing some homework, she said. Given recent media scandals involving major outlets such as CBS News altering interviewees' responses to put forth certain narratives, voters are hopefully realizing the legacy media cannot be trusted to provide their audience with basic facts, Tomeo said. They reinvent narratives to push agendas, especially when it comes to the hot-button issue of abortion this election season. Voters need to find alternative sources for their information, debunking the lies of the abortion industry concerning the impact pro-life laws are having on pregnant women who find themselves in an emergency situation, she said. She suggested Susan B. Anthony profile America in conjunction with the Charlotte Lozier Institute, turning to find organizations along with solid Catholic news sources can help voters as they discern on the way to the polls. Great power, greater responsibility. 12 ways to hold our elected officials in prayer, by Marie O'Neill. In a world where political leaders face daunting challenges, the call to pray for those in authority is more crucial than ever. Whether we agree with the policies or not, our faith calls us to pray for those in authority. Here are 12 meaningful ways we can lift up our politician in prayer. Number one, wisdom. Pray for divine wisdom to fill the minds of our politicians, just as God granted Solomon. Ask that they can be given the insight to navigate the complexities of leadership with justice and fairness. Create a wisdom prayer jar. Write politicians' names and put them in a jar. Commit to drawing a name and praying for a politician daily. Two, integrity. Lift up our leaders in prayer, asking God to keep them true to the common good and honest in their actions. Pray that they resist the lures of corruption and stand firm in truth and goodness. Offer a day of fasting. Fast for a day or offer up a sacrifice, such as giving up a favorite treat, as a spiritual offering for the integrity of those in office. Three, courage. Ask God to bless our politicians with the courage to stand up for what is right, even when it's unpopular. Pray that they have the strength to make bold decisions rooted in truth and justice. Dedicate a rosary for courage. offer a rosary specifically for the courage of politicians, asking Mary to intercede for them for compassion. Intercede for our leaders, asking God to soften their hearts toward the most vulnerable. Pray that they are moved to create policies that reflect love, care, and protection for all people. Offer your prayer at Mass for compassion. Offer up your full active participation at Mass for the intention of politicians' compassion, inviting fellow parishioners to join you in this powerful form of prayer. 5. Unity. In these divided times, pray fervently for unity among our political leaders. Ask God to help them find common ground and work together for the common good, transcending party lines and personal agendas. Organize a communal prayer service. Host a prayer vigil or a day of fasting for political unity, inviting community members to come together in prayer regardless of political affiliation. 6. Clarity. The world of politics can often be murky. Pray that our politicians are blessed with clarity of thought, enabling them to understand complex issues and make informed decisions that benefit society. Holy hours for clarity. Dedicate an hour before Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life for those in office to receive guidance and clarity. 7. Protection. Ask God to safeguard our leaders, both physically and spiritually. Pray that they are protected from harm and that they are guided away from any paths that lead to moral or ethical downfall. Organize a protection prayer chain. Get a group of people to commit to praying for a leader's protection every hour of the day for a week. 8. Peace. Political environments can be rife with tension. Pray for the peace of Christ to permeate the hearts and minds of our politicians, helping them to govern with calmness, wisdom, and a sense of purpose. Host a family prayer night. Gather families in your parish to pray for peace together, interceding for your community, our country, and the world. 9. Servant leadership. Intercede for our politicians, asking that they embrace the model of servant leadership exemplified by Christ. Pray that they prioritize the needs of others over personal ambition. Walk for servant leadership. Start a monthly prayer walk around your community, offering prayers for politicians and local leaders to serve selflessly and justly. 10. Family life. Political life can be demanding and stressful. Pray for the families of our politicians, asking God to provide them with strength, unity, and understanding during challenging times. Letters for family life. Send a note or a card to a political leader, letting them know that you are praying for their family's well-being and peace. 11. Conversion. Pray for the conversion of elected officials who might be far from God. Ask the Holy Spirit to work in their hearts, drawing them closer to a relationship with Christ and His teachings. Prayer challenge for conversion. Organize a prayer challenge with friends or fellow parishioners specifically focused on the conversion of political leaders. 12. Your own heart. Finally, pray for your own heart, asking God to help you see our politicians through His eyes with love, compassion, and hope. Pray for the grace to support them in prayer, even when it's difficult. Create a prayer journal. Start a journal dedicated to writing down prayers for politicians and reflections on your journey to loving and praying for them. Get involved. These 12 ways to pray for our politicians are just the beginning. By involving yourself in these creative and powerful acts of faith, you can profoundly impact the world around you by offering it to the King of Kings. As St. Paul encourages us, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high position. Together, let's lift up our leaders in prayer and be the change we wish to see in the world. Hurricane Helene, Subsidiarity and Solidarity in Action by Jared Stout. Winds of about 30 miles an hour, I read. Checking the weather the evening of September 26th, the next morning after a calm hour of prayer, my wife and I watched something very different transpire. Winds topping 70 miles an hour, blowing over trees, sending debris flying and driving water through our chimney pipe and basement walls. A township of Green Creek, North Carolina, was spared the worst of Helene, far enough away from the nearby mountains to avoid catastrophic flooding and landslides. Yet when the sun began to shine in the early afternoon of September 27th, we were left wondering what had happened as we survived the damage. My last column reflected on how politics should aim for the common good as families, local communities, and nations cooperate in obtaining the essential goods for human flourishing. After writing it, I saw many of the principles in action in all those levels in the aftermath of Helene. Peeping out the window to survey the damage, we realized two trees had blocked our driveway. My boys sprang into action and began cutting up the trees to haul them away in pieces, but they soon discovered that a large oak tree had taken out the power lines around the corner. Little did we know that countless others had done the same kind of damage throughout the entire region. Groups of local men began working up and down the roads, cutting passageways through the downed trees throughout the day, making us grateful to live in a place capable of addressing problems without simply waiting for help. And yet, there were limits to what we could do with power lines strewn across every road. The next day, we were surprised to hear loud French commands broadcast on speakers down the road. Seven bucket trucks from Canada pull up to cut the rest of the trees tangled up in the electrical wires and to reattach the power lines. It was a shocking moment of deliverance from a crew who drove across the continent to help us. Even after they repaired our lines while receiving our hearty thanks, we still had to wait a week for the power to return because the restoration work had just begun. We watched those Canadian crews drive back and forth for days as they continued their work. The week we spent without power and internet could have been much worse. Unlike others, we never lost water, but many neighbors with a well and needed to fill up jugs at surrounding houses or in city water. Thankfully, we had prepared for disaster with a solar generator, non-perishable food provisions, and laundry equipment. We even joked, "Wow, Mom, all your gadgets are finally coming in handy." The stressful week had its own blessings with more time outside in the eerily beautiful weather that followed the storm, cooking over the fires without distracting technology. Neighbors banded together and swapped stories. And when the power came back on, we realized that others in the area hit much harder than us by mudslides and flooding needed our help as well. Screaming subsidiarity as a rallying cry against outside intrusion is easy until you need solidarity. On the other hand, there is much more than families and local communities can do to become more self-sufficient, draw upon resources and talents from within, and prepare for disasters. The church teaches us to balance subsidiarity and solidarity by building a society that focuses on family first, encourages local solutions when possible, and cares for those in need. Before the storm hit, I had just finished reading Localism, Coming Home to Catholic Social Teaching, edited by Dale Alquist and Michael Warren Davis. The book offers an impressive collection of essays on the importance of local community from leading thinkers such as Anthony Esselin and Joseph Pierce, and those focused on practical implementation such as Senator Marco Rubio. Dale Alquist explains the concept of localism in his introduction. It is a word that already has a meaning. The support of local production and consumption of goods, local control of government, promotion of local history, local culture, and local identity, and the protection of local freedom. It obviously favors directness and decentralization, and it is even more obviously opposed to globalism and collectivism. Modern culture too often seeks radical independence, but we can only achieve the common good and find genuine happiness by depending on God and one another. Thank you for joining us for Catholic News, read by Chris Mihalik.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.